You are listening to the Corrections Connection News Network, CCNN, your weekly news source for the corrections and criminal justice industry.
Welcome to today's live talk. I'm your host, Michelle Gasso. Today, the Corrections Connection will be looking at the use of less lethal technologies and tactics in corrections. Joining us today to discuss this topic is Joseph J. Marchese, an internationally known correctional consultant with over 35 years of experience in criminal justice. He is especially recognized for his expertise in correctional emergency preparedness, tactical team development, and hostage negotiations. Currently, Marchese serves on the New York State Division of Parole's executive team as the agency's intergovernmental liaison and the executive assistant to the executive director. Previously, he served a two-year term as a correctional program specialist at the National Institute of Corrections, where he was instrumental in implementing the NIC Academy's regionalization of training program. He has also served as a member of the New York State Department of Correctional Services Training Academy's executive team, a senior training technician for the New York State Commission of Correction, and is past president of the International Association of Correctional Training Personnel. Marchese has provided training in over 35 states, the U.S. Virgin Islands, Canada, and for the Irish Prison Service. He has a bachelor's degree from John Jay College of Criminal Justice in New York City and a master's degree in public affairs from the State University of New York at Stony Brook. Welcome to today's live talk, Mr. Marchese.
Hi, Michelle. How are you?
Very, very well. How are you?
Okay.
Well, we're glad to have you today. This month, we've been covering issues that pertain to emergency response and corrections, and today we'd like to talk about the use of less lethal means of quelling those disturbances today. So I guess, first off, what would you say is sort of the general feeling in corrections about the use of less than lethal weapons and tactics? Is this considered the industry standard now, or is corrections still kind of developing that?
Well, to start off with, the industry standard, of course, varies. I don't think there is one at this time. But in general, the use of force is never the preferred form of quelling a disturbance when it's lethal. So lethal force is to be avoided, usually at all costs. However, if less than lethal force can be used to achieve the goals of the operation, whether it's controlling inmates, protecting staff, hostage recovery, or whatever it is, it is the preferred form of doing it. So, you know, less than lethal certainly gives administrators and tactical teams options beyond the lethal use of force.
Now, are there different, sort of in addition to the question, but are there different, there's different levels, sort of in a continuum of how a team would decide to use what level of force?
Well, that decision is almost always made in the command post during a response during an emergency.
Okay.
And I should stress something else. Less than lethal does not always mean the weapons cannot be lethal.
Mm-hmm.
It means that they are just less likely or normally not lethal. So you could use a less than lethal weapon with lethal results. And, you know, that's an important point I want to make up front.
Okay.
So the decision to use lethal or non-lethal weapons or less than lethal weapons really lies in the command post, and it's dependent upon what's going on in the situation.
Okay. Who tends to learn about what these devices do and less than lethal tactics? Is it more than likely that an emergency response team or members of a team would learn about these devices or tactics, or would it be all of a facility's custody staff?
You know what? This is a great question because I'll tell you something. Not as many people know about the technology, less than lethal, and lethal weapons as really do need to know.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone who has decision-making responsibilities or authority to authorize the use of such weapons really needs to know the goals that can be achieved by their use and the probable outcomes. You know, as well as things like decontamination procedures, training procedures, and all that other stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So anyone who can use this stuff really, you know, should be trained. In addition, not only should be trained, but many states have watchdog agencies or governing agencies that require certification.
I see.
And that certification has to be compliant with, or the state or the agency is acting at its own peril. In addition, the manufacturer will also tell you who has to be trained in the use of these things.
Now, does certification tend to come from like the manufacturer or the creator of the device, or is that, are there sort of independent kind of training?
Well, quite often it can come from the manufacturer, but also it has to be consistent with the requirements of the governing agency, whether it's federal, state, you know, certainly federal compliance has to be achieved, and so does state compliance.
Okay.
And maybe what's, you know, acceptable on a federal level may have additional requirements overlapped on a state level.
Okay.
And, you know, there's a couple other things I'd like to mention in this area, because it's pretty important stuff when you consider using less than lethal. You know, some agencies dictate what you can use, or some regulatory agencies dictate what's acceptable and not acceptable. For example, in New York State, the State Commission of Correction has rules regarding certain weapons, and some weapons have not received the approval and therefore for use, and therefore are not authorized in the facility. In fact, even if the sheriff's departments in the road patrol uses them, uses such weapons, those weapons may not be able to be stored in the facility safe or facility armory. So there's a lot of things to be considered. And just one more thing on the training end, medical personnel, when a weapon is selected, medical personnel must be trained in decontamination procedures and the potential treatment for any injuries that any of these devices might inflict.
Oh, that's a really good point. Because, you know, in the aftermath, there's, you know, it may not be a lethal weapon, but it might be really uncomfortable for somebody.
Well, certainly with the, you know, OC spray or the pepper mace, that's really important because that, you know, there's all sorts of things that happen there.
Right.
And even beanbag guns or any of the tasers and any of that other stuff can produce certain side effects and things that medical staff need to be alerted to.
Mm-hmm. Well, you've kind of led me into my next question, which is, what are some of the less lethal technologies that are being used out there? What are some of the things that maybe folks in New York, where you are using?
Well, certainly one of the oldest ones is the baton.
Mm-hmm.
And the baton, you know, while it can be lethal, is you know, I've never seen any training where it was designed to be anything but less than lethal.
Mm-hmm.
And there's all sorts of variations of batons, collapsible batons and different types of riot batons and things like that. But, you know, along with them are things like chemical agents, and it appears that the agent of choice today seems to be pepper spray.
Okay.
And the various methods of delivery that they have. Flashbangs, which is the nickname really for distraction devices, while they're not considered a weapon, they are an essential device in the arsenal, especially in hostage extraction and hostage rescue. Stopping riots, stun guns, tasers, taser and variations of those, stun shields and things like that, beanbag rounds that can be deployed from various weapons, projectiles, sting balls, water cannons, and it was something out there for a while, and I haven't seen much about it recently, but some kind of a sticky goo that you spray on inmates, and as well as the restraint devices.
Sure. You know.
My recommendation, when you know, there's a whole bunch of stuff out there. So when shopping for less than lethal devices, I recommend you go to, like, the American Jail Association Conference or the American Correctional Association. Or, in fact, right now, in 2 weeks, we're going to have the Middle Atlantic States Corrections Association Conference here in Albany.
Mm-hmm.
And when you go there, you can see the displays of weapons and the vendors, and they tell you what they do and they're intended to do. And it's really a good place for an administrator or a manager or a team leader to take a look at what's available. And one other thing, that because I don't want to forget this in this interview, is that when you do select a weapon to to use, whatever it is, not less than lethal weapon. Find out what training is required and how long the certification is good for. For example, I mean, that could add a lot of cost
sure.
to the purchase of that weapon. If, for example, all the training has to be done by the manufacturer, you know, are you winding up sending people across the country to get this training, or do you have to pay their instructor to come here? Ideally, if you can certify instructors, then there's the in-house training that could take place.
Right.
But then, even then, you got to consider the length of certification, because training is a cost. You know, if you're certified for 3 months, and you got to train your entire staff every 3 months in the use of the weapon, I mean, man, it could get very expensive with overtime and staff replacement costs.
Sure, that's a great point. If you're just joining us, we're talking to correctional consultant Joe Marchese about less lethal technologies and tactics. My next question had to do with some training that you're doing on emergency response for jails. Can you tell us a little bit about what this training is, and maybe also if jail officers should be receiving different training in this area than prison officers?
Well, again, the training is always dependent on what weapons you use and what teams you have available, and who actually does the tactical work. Some agencies rely on outside assistance to do tactical response. So it's going to vary, but, you know, I always joke with classes, and I have for years, that the first things traditionally emergency response teams did, or agencies did, was to design a patch for their uniform. And then the next thing they did was to buy equipment. You know, thank God things have changed since then.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, those who are listening today who've been around a while can relate to that. That there's actually equipment in their lockers and their arsenal that people bought, and they really don't know what it's used for, or, you know, and it's outdated and so on. But it represents times when the agency has activated the tactical response unit, tried to get a program going, and then it sort of faded out. So my focus in training really focuses on structuring the emergency response procedures for the agency.
Okay.
You know, and it starts with the initial response and the response procedures. You know, and if you'd like, I could go into a little more detail on that.
Well, sure. I mean, maybe give us a little nutshell of what are some of the basic components that you're training folks on.
Sure. You know, first of all, emergencies happen, you know, Murphy's Law, when it's, you know, they have, if it can go wrong, it will. It will go wrong at the worst possible time. So you got to start an emergency procedure or planning procedure before the emergency occurs, and you have to start it with routine operation of the jail. And we use an NYPD approach called the 4 C's, which is confine, contain, consolidate, and control. Confine means anything that happens in the jail, you keep it to as small an area as possible. Any section an inmate gets, inmates get, like if they go from the rec yard to the kitchen, creates numerous more problems. When they're in the kitchen, you can't feed the other inmates, they have weapons, they have food, and so on.
Sure.
After confining, you contain it. You keep it there. You keep it in a perimeter, you keep them inside, you keep them so they can't get out, you keep other people from entering the area that aren't supposed to be there. The third C is consolidate, which really says all operations in the facility are not going to a command post. And, you know, the emergency plan now activated really says there is one incident command, and that's the person in charge of everything that happens in the facility. Everybody's got to go through the commander. Teams don't talk what we call lateral communications. They talk through the command post to other teams. And that's the fourth C is control. Once the plan is activated, all operations are controlled by the incident commander.
Mm-hmm.
So incident command has to be has to come from the command post, and everybody does what they're supposed to do. And in the emergency planning process, and this really gets to, you know, kind of a convoluted way, but gets to the purchase and identification of non-lethal weapons.
Mm-hmm.
In an emergency, each response team has to have a mission, whether it's a media team, whether it's the CERT team or the tactical team, the hostage negotiations team, they all have a mission. And in an emergency, all tasks have to be covered. No stone gets left unturned. So once the team mission is defined, for example, for the tactical team, then and only then do you go out and select weapons.
Right.
In essence, team mission first, then weapons.
Yeah, know what you're going to do and what's how it's contained and all those things before.
Right, as opposed to, wow, this is a really neat weapon. We ought to design our...
Let's try this out today.
Exactly.
That's good. How about the whether or not jails need a different type of training on this than prison?
Well, you know, again, that really depends on what... Jails are different. In New York State, their county system. In most states, their county jail systems.
Uh-huh.
There are some regional jails. But our county jail systems vary in size, in function. Prisons have sentenced, for the most part, sentenced inmates. Jails have pretrial detainees and so on. And so the mission is different of the facility in itself. And judging from size, and, you know, I might be talking about four different emergency response teams in a larger facility. And in a smaller facility, the guy says, you know, one of the officers say, yeah, that's me, all four of them, because there's not, you know, we only have five people on staff.
Mm.
So you can't really say prisons and jails are different.
Okay.
You know, but the prison system, one thing is state-run, and... usually they can standardize procedures and training. They have a lot of pluses in designing the emergency response teams.
Well, while we're sort of, we've gotten off of the idea of less than lethal technologies, but I was wondering if we could come back to that a little bit.
Sure.
Folks can get some training from, and I think your training is through AJA.
Yep.
Folks can get training from some other entities as well. What are some good sources about for learning about less than lethal technologies, and maybe even some tactics too? I don't know if there's hand-to-hand sort of tactics, that kind of thing, but especially learning about what some of those technologies are that are out there.
Well, I have to say, you know, aside from the conferences,
mm-hmm.
you know, and I have to... When I do one of these workshops on emergency planning, the greatest resource I have with me are the people in the class.
Uh-huh.
And networking with those people, talking to each other, what works? Gee, I'm utilizing this less than lethal weapon.
Uh-huh.
And I'm really finding it's really excellent, it's good. And whenever we do this training, we point that out, that the people in the class may have the answer or have tested something that you're thinking about now. In fact, I use one of my professional contacts in the business, Dennis Corsell, from the Albany County Jail here in New York. I always call him up and say, Dennis, have you heard about this particular weapon? Do you know anybody who's using it? And
sure.
Dennis gladly says, well, look, I've tried it out, and this works, but that doesn't, and there's training issues, and, you know, so somebody like Dennis, who's a professional out there, who really has the experience, who's tried the weapons out, and has other contacts. We in this business pretty much stay together, you know, and
sure.
we talk to each other a lot. In addition, trade shows, you know. The mock riot was just run the beginning of May here in Moundsville, West Virginia, and the Office of Law Enforcement and Corrections Technology constantly is testing less than, and they're producing monographs on the results of these weapons and so on. Mm-hmm. National Institute of Justice, NIJ, and National Institute of Corrections, as well as the professional conference.
Great. Well, those are all great suggestions. Thank you so much for talking with us today, and that concludes today's live talk. Again, thank you to Joe Marchese.
Okay, thank you, Michelle.
For joining us, and thank you to our audience for tuning in as well. For more information on less lethal technologies and emergency response in corrections, be sure to read this month's articles on corrections.com. For CCNN, I'm Michelle Gasso.
You are listening to the Corrections Connection News Network, CCNN, your weekly news source for the corrections and criminal justice industry.